Tiponomics. What do we know about the GOP frontrunner?
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson. Republican candidates will meet tonight for a debate in Iowa, and according to the polls, the front runner right now is former House Speaker Newt Gingrich. Historian Steve Gillen is author of The Pact, Bill Clinton, Newt Gingrich, and the Rivalry That Defined a Generation, and he joins us now to talk about Newtonomics, if you will. Steve Gillen, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, what would be the biggest economic change, do you think, under President Gingrich, if it comes to that, given what we know about him?
I think a lot of it depends on whether or not he has to deal with a Democratic Congress. Gingrich has shown when he was Speaker, especially in the final phase of his speakership, that he is willing to reach across the aisle and form bipartisan relationships. There are two Newt Gingriches. Gingrich has always made a distinction between politics and governance. For him, politics are the inflammatory things you have to say in order to gain power. Once he's in power, he is more compromising and more willing to propose bipartisan solutions. When I did my research on the relationship between he and Clinton, I was amazed that the policy people in the Clinton White House all told me that behind closed doors, where there are no cameras there and a lot of other people to play to, that Gingrich was always trying to make a deal. They found Gingrich easy to deal with.
Well, what do we know about where he stands on the big economic issues of the day?
Gingrich doesn't really have a well-thought-out economic philosophy. All the issues are all framed based on his sense of what works politically. So he doesn't sit around with economists and say, okay, these are the issues that are going to be the best for America. He sits around and says, what issues can I pick and choose from that are going to undermine Democrats and improve my position?
Well, there's one economic idea that's gotten a lot of attention that he has said that we should change the child labor laws in this country.
Yeah. That's typical Gingrich. You know, Gingrich comes out with wacky ideas. It won't be the last crazy idea from Newt Gingrich that we hear on the campaign trail. It's not something I think we'd have to worry about if he became president.
Steve Gillen, author of The Pact, Bill Clinton, Newt Gingrich, and the Rivalry That Defined a Generation, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
By the way, we'll be talking about the economic policies of the other candidates in the coming weeks here on Marketplace. Well, Congress is still working on a $1 trillion spending bill ahead of a midnight deadline tomorrow, and it appears federal student aid programs are on the chopping block. From the Marketplace Education Desk at WYPR in Baltimore, Amy Scott reports.
When college students take out loans subsidized by the federal government, Uncle Sam pays the interest for the first 6 months after they graduate. Terry Hartle is a lobbyist with the American Council on Education. He says Congress is expected to end that grace period.
The good news is the cuts that we are looking at are far less than almost every observer predicted.
The savings on interest payments will help pay for federal grants for low-income students under the Pell program. But Hartle expects cuts there, too. He says students will only be eligible for the grants for 6 years instead of the current nine, and they'll have to have a high school diploma or an equivalent. Mark Kantrowitz with FinAid.org says those students are more likely to graduate.
If the goal of spending federal money is to produce college graduates, you'd want to focus that funding on the students where it's going to make a difference.
But Congress may also make it harder to qualify for the maximum Pell Grant, about $5,500 a year, and that could price more low-income families out of a college education. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are down across Asia, but up across Europe this morning, down almost 2% in Hong Kong and up about 0.5% right now in London. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow lost 131 points to close at 11,823.
Do you enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace Music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
Ministers from the World Trade Organization are meeting in Geneva today, and they're about to send an invitation to Russia to join the group. It'll be the biggest addition since China joined 10 years ago, but it does have its downsides for Russia, as Peter Van Dyke reports from Moscow.
Russia is the last big world economy outside the WTO. It's taken 18 years to agree the terms. That shows lingering doubts both inside and outside the country. Sergei Yushin heads Russia's National Meat Association.
Russia would need about 8 to 10 more years to pursue independent industrial and agricultural policy to get ready to be more competitive when we really enter this WTO world.
Yushin says Russia's agricultural sector is just taking off, and a flood of cheap imports from the US and Europe would set it back.
We understand that we need this competition to modernize ourselves, to become more and more efficient. But this is really the worst possible time for opening the gates so widely.
Open they will, though, and it's not just foreign food producers who are looking to profit. Art Franchek is the president of the American Institute of Business and Economics in Moscow.
High-tech goods will have a zero tariff, so the high-tech companies are going to have a big opportunity in this country.
Russia hopes abolishing tariffs on high-tech goods will help it to modernize. After all, Russians want cheaper smartphones and tablets as much as anyone else. In Moscow, I'm Peter Van Dyke for Marketplace.
And finally, to some new local TV ads on the air in Davenport, Iowa, that actor Will Ferrell wanted to do for free. They're for Old Milwaukee Beer. Ferrell called the company that makes the beer back in September and asked if he could do the ads pro bono, and they, of course, said yes.
When I'm not too busy being a big-time Hollywood phony, I like to come out here to Davenport, sit on my favorite log, and crack open a ice-cold Old Milwaukee. Something I do. Well, truth be told, I've never been to Davenport. This is my first time, but it's something I want to do, you know?
What remains unclear is why Ferrell chose Davenport, which is not where the beer is made. It's made in Wisconsin. Or why he chose Old Milwaukee, which online reviewers give a D+. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.